Hey, good morning and welcome to the Preparing Your Enterprise for Windows 10 as a Service Jumpstart. My name is Simon May and I'm going to be your host during the course of this jumpstart for the next couple of hours as we start to take you first inside the Windows Insider program a little bit, explain Windows as a Service to you a little more, and then we're going to start looking at some of the things you might want to do around deployment of Windows 10 and also around how you're going to be able to stay current with Windows 10 as a service. The intent of what we're doing here is actually so that you guys can be able to go away and start thinking about how you're going to be doing your deployments inside of your own environment. Most of what we're going to be talking about is designed for actually thinking about how enterprises and businesses are going to be thinking about using and deploying Windows 10 as a service. So, we're going to start off with our first section, and this isn't going to be kind of completely PowerPoint led. This is going to be an opportunity for some of the questions that you guys have been asking around Windows as a service and around insiders to be answered by one of the engineering leaders who actually knows a whole ton of stuff about how the entire process has come together. So joining me now is Bill Karagounis. Bill, welcome to the MVA studio.
Oh, thank you.
It's a real pleasure to have you here.
Good.
To start taking us through a little bit of Windows as a service and starting to introduce these folks to this idea of a slightly new way of Windows working. So
absolutely.
Let's just start off with a really nice, simple question. What is Windows 10 as a service?
Windows 10 as a service. Well, let's talk about it from a perspective of how we engineer for Windows as a service.
Actually, just what we do, I just realized, I actually forgot to ask you to introduce yourself.
Oh, that's okay. I'm happy to do that. Bill Karagounis, I am the Director of Program Management for what we call the Operating System Fundamentals team. And that means responsibilities around essentially a lot of the infrastructure that powers the pre-release software, us getting builds or flights out to the insider community, the insider tools, feedback systems, as well as some of the core capabilities of the operating system, like compatibility of apps, battery life, performance, reliability. That is essentially sort of, and the deployment of the operating system, the actual setup and upgrade aspects of that too. So that's, what my team does and a lot of what we did during Windows 10 and sort of bootstrapped a lot of those systems and sort of got the community up and running, which was a lot of fun and has become essentially our new way of work from an engineering perspective.
So let's go back to that first question then. What is Windows as a service?
So I think it's interesting to sort of poke into that question from a perspective of the way we engineer and how stuff comes through and how, we've evolved as an engineering organization to, to power the Windows as a service machine, so to speak. One of the things that is germane to that is the Insider program. It was incredibly important for us during Windows 10 to have a community of users and have a group of people that were using the product very, very early on and giving us feedback and, telling us, what they liked, what they didn't like, how things were working, et cetera, et cetera. It probably is a good time to sort of flip to one of the slides too, so we can sort of talk a little bit about the way we iterate on internally as well. And this is what we refer to as the WAS cycle. So with Windows 10, we sort of fleshed out this and we sort of automated, a lot of this stuff so that we could sort of power the innovation that we wanted to do. It also, if you start at the top, we all start with, the definition and the building of features, the instrumentation around those things, preparing them for flighting, which essentially means preparing them to, sort of get builds deployed in a very, very quick way. And then we essentially went into the mode of delivering that code as quickly as possible. But one of the things we sort of changed for Windows 10 was this notion of target rings so that, code essentially goes to a small community first and then sort of progressively gets to larger and larger groups of folks, all of which can give us feedback and, essentially tell us what's wrong and what's working, and we can sort of watch the product as it evolves. From there, we go into the measurement phase. So we sort of want to go away and understand, you know, what's happening with the product. We have various analytics, we have various dashboards, we're running a service, so we want to watch, you know, various builds, just like you'd watch a normal service. And then based on the feedback that's coming back, we go away and we respond. We look at, you know, what's not working the way we expected it to work? What kind of feedback did we get? What worked for people? What didn't work for people? And then we, you know, make those changes and reason on that feedback. And then we sort of go back into the development mode and we iterate quickly around that cycle. And one of the other things that I did want to also talk about is, you know, this notion of rings. We should probably pop up that notion of that rings slide too. This is essentially the way that, you know, from an engineering standpoint, we propagate the code through the system. And, you know, we have, you know, right now we have these five main sort of rings or groups, if you want to call them that. Starts off with a set of people inside the operating system group that are essentially the canaries in the coal mine. And they get, you know, the stuff, you know, like, you know, pretty much as soon as it's compiled, it's ready to go. They start running on those bits. And then once, you know, that code base, once that build, that set of features has actually passed validation for that group, it goes on to the rest of the operating system group. From there, it moves out to, you know, a large number of folks within Microsoft. And then once, you know, we've essentially established the criteria and something is good enough to go, that's when, you know, Windows Insiders get the bits. And Windows Insiders have a choice in terms of whether they get the bits quickly or whether they can wait a little while to get them. So that's an option that they have as part of the product. But, you know, the key thing as part of this whole process is there's a constant flow of new capabilities as we're engineering the product. And the other thing to sort of think about in that context is insiders become part of the engineering process. They're an integral part because we very much rely on that feedback to be able to respond and make sure that we're building the right products.
It's kind of interesting. I was part of a number of those rings as we went through that process, and it's kind of been interesting to actually see what's happened along the way and see that the feedback that's been provided back in through Windows Insiders, the feedback that we've given internally as well inside of Microsoft, really is making big changes to that product as it's moving through its life cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Very important channel for us.
So one of the questions that that came in from Ivan Nikolic, I'm going to butcher the name here, Ivan Nikolic, is how did we come up with the idea of making Windows as a service? Where did that particular part of the thought process come from?
Well, you know, we really wanted to essentially drive, you know, and have this notion of, you know, feedback, quick iteration, and you know, and getting things out there relatively quickly, so that, you know, we can get bits into our customers' hands quickly and we can react to those things. And we talked about those feedback channels as well. So, you know, it was, you know, one of the key things we sort of set off to do. And then we decided, you know, throughout the Windows 10 timeframe, what we did was we really wanted to get the bits out there as quickly as possible. And Windows 10 was kind of special in a way because what it did was, you know, it was shortly after we'd actually started development before we actually sort of started giving it out to the Insider program as well. And we felt that that was an important thing to sort of establish as part of the Windows as a Service cycle.
So one of those things that you mentioned was the feedback, and that has been incredibly important to us. Can you just talk a little bit more specifically about how that feedback has actually come in and tied into the program?
Sure. So, I mean, there's various channels for feedback. There's two major ones and there's a couple of secondary ones. Feedback is an inherent part of the product. There is a Windows Feedback app that's part of Windows 10 that you can sort of drill into. You know, you can basically just launch it, and if you're an insider, you get the option to, you know, file product feedback or, you know, give suggestions. There's also what we do is there are, you know, scenarios where customers or users, once they execute a scenario, we will ask a question about that. And there's a good example, for example, is on the phone. So, for example, if you take a picture on the phone, sometimes you'll be asked, as soon as you've taken that picture, you'll be asked, hey, what do you think of the quality of this picture? And you get to rate that on a scale of 1 to 5, and also give, you know, some text around, you know, what you thought, what was good, what was bad. That feedback all comes through into the engineering team, sort of the engineering owners for various areas of the product, which is then part of their process to go away and to, react to that feedback and make changes as necessary. We also have other feedback channels too. I mean, there's the more traditional channels of forums, etc., that we use as well. But it's an integral part of the way we work.
So in terms of that feedback app, I found some really cool things with the feedback app. Using it on my phone, I found that there's a really handy key combination. If I want to, if I'm doing something and I need to provide feedback very quickly, I can just press the volume down and the power button, just like volume up and power to take a screenshot. It actually allows me to just launch the app and be able to give feedback really, really quickly. What are we actually doing with the feedback app?
Well, I mean, the feedback app is, you know, so it's really important for us to be able to sort of get contextual feedback to sort of understand where the user's going and where they're giving feedback. So one of the key things on that feedback app, as you mentioned, was, you know, I'm doing something, I'm in the middle of something. I don't want to like go away from that thing so that I can sort of launch feedback. So having a quick key combination essentially means that from a system perspective, we can know, you know, what are the apps that were running on that machine, and, you know, where was the user contextually when they gave that feedback, so that it helps us, you know, get a better understanding of what was going on. The feedback app has also been designed so that we want people to be able to do things as quickly and efficiently as possible. So when you're using the feedback app, the first thing you do is you essentially search. You type in the problem you're having or the feedback you want to give. And then the app will go away and sort of look at the database of feedback and come back with potential matches for, you know, that particular part of feedback. Then, if you see that feedback, you can upvote it. And, you know, upvoted feedback for us is an important signal. It basically sort of gives us an idea that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's important to people, and it helps us reason on the feedback and make decisions about the feedback as well. If you don't find your feedback, then you can go away and you can choose the category of information, and then type in, you know, your particular feedback, as well as, you know, optionally put in a screenshot, if you want, of what was going on in the system. And, you know, that process also helps us, you know, direct and route feedback to the right people in the engineering team. But an important thing to note is the feedback is actually coming into the engineering organization. It's not being sort of filtered. You know, it's sort of coming through. Of course, we aggregate, and there are systems that process it because, you know, we have a lot of insiders, and the feedback can be quite a lot. But yeah, it's coming straight back through to us.
So I've got a bunch more questions that we're going to ask in a second, but just to respond to a few little things that are coming in through the Q&A. This is not a place where we can help you with technical support, unfortunately, for various issues that you're having with your upgrades and maybe moving between different operating systems, how you can go into the technicalities of being able to do a dual boot. For those kind of things, go and check out the forums. There's a really good place there to be able to ask those kind of questions online and get some technical support by using the usual technical support methods. Unfortunately, we are live and it's very difficult for us to dig into individual people's specific issues. Mm-hmm. But with that in mind, and with some of the thoughts that we're going through here with why Windows as a Service is a really good idea, why is Windows as a Service a really good idea for businesses?
Okay. We're planning to deliver innovation, you know, to Windows Update connected devices on a regular basis. And, you know, essentially making updates more incremental to, you know, test, adopt, and deploy. There's business value to that. You know, when things are more incremental in nature, the cost of revalidating things can be smaller. There's also value in terms of, you know, being up to date and staying up to date. Or having the latest greatest security software and the latest greatest security features and protections in an operating system, as one example. We understand that, you know, many organizations require choice in terms of, you know, updates and how they're delivered, and the pace with which they're delivered. So with Windows 10, businesses will be able to pick the speed of innovation that's right for every group within their business, rather than rely on a one-size-fits-all sort of solution. Now, this topic, you know, I think we've got Michael Niehaus, who's going to be here later on today, and he's going to go into it, you know, in a lot more depth in terms of, you know, how this works and why it makes sense and why it's a great idea.
Yeah, and that actually ties to a direct question that we had from Tim Siddle, which was how do businesses start to be able to manage what updates apply to machines and what updates maybe you put off for a little while? And are there particular ways that we can think about maybe not allowing maybe specific driver updates to apply to a machine? We'll answer some of those questions a little bit later on as we kind of go through the formulaic material that we've prepared for the rest of the Jumpstart. So kind of the information, the feedback that we're getting, how do we drill deeper into that information?
Okay, that's a good question. So I'm going to use a scenario that's very near and dear and sort of close to home for me. Being the team responsible for OS reliability, one of the things that, you know, we care a lot about is apps and app reliability, you know, specifically around, you know, apps that are crashing. So one of the things that, you know, is sort of important to note, you know, Windows has an incredibly broad swath of apps that run. Think about, you know, Win32 apps from eons ago. Like, you know, I've heard of people running Win32 apps that were actually written in the 90s on Windows 10, to different apps that were built on top of like .NET frameworks or, you know, universal apps that are sort of coming through. And this app ecosystem is incredibly dynamic. There are some apps that are updated daily in the store. There are new apps that are popping up all the time. So what ends up happening is, you know, as things change, as things become new, you know, we sometimes we'll see crashes. So from a perspective of the insiders and the data that we get back, these crashes essentially get sent back to Microsoft and are essentially turned into a signature. It turns out that it's pretty straightforward to sort of take a unique crash and sort of turn that into, you know, hey, here is the unique signature for that crash. And then from a system perspective, you know, we aggregate all this data together so that we can know that, hey, you know, here is a new app and it's crashing a lot. And we can sort of do things like failure curves. And then, you know, we have systems that sort of take all this data, you know, aggregate it, look for things that are new or things that are trending. And then, you know, our engineers, you know, quite literally come in the morning and the system has essentially gone away and prioritized things that are new, things that are hot, things that I've seen before that are potentially trending. And, you know, that gives us a really great opportunity to go away and triage and prioritize the things we want to fix. I mean, this data for us, especially the data that we sort of get back out of the insider community and people using the product, it essentially means we can build a better product and have better experiences. So, you know, once we triage these app crashes, we can determine whether that's a third-party piece of code, and then we want to reach out to some application vendor, or if it's something to do with some part of Microsoft, we can go away and, you know, deal with that appropriately. But that's just one sort of example of how we use the data to sort of improve the experience and have better products. And, you know, being in this Windows as a service mode, it basically means, you know, we're able to react quickly and iterate quickly, and we've sort of set ourselves up and sort of, you know, built the muscle to be able to go away and do that.
So obviously there's going to be a lot of concern out there that when we do create an update and we do then put it through the rings and we do start to do deployment, that actually everybody thinks that their enterprise is completely unique. And the reason for that presumably is because actually a lot of enterprises, having been there, they have a very unique set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of detail that can be extrapolated out. And kind of, I think where I'm going with this is, how do we know that when we roll out one of those updates, we're not going to break something that somebody's really reliant on, break their apps?
Okay. So, I mean, look, the question is really about the compatibility of the things we're doing and our promise to compatibility as part of the operating system work we do. And it's incredibly important to us. As I mentioned before, you know, people want to you know, we've heard of cases where people want to bring out a financial product they've been using for the last 10 years, and they use it once a year because to do their taxes. But, you know, we really want to make sure that that app continues to work and isn't impacted in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, essentially we have a lot of we have hundreds of apps that for every build, every daily build of Windows or, you know, PC or phone, we run those apps and we make sure that, you know, based on these top sets of apps with high usage around the world, we're making sure that those things continue to work. Or if there's issues, we address those issues in those early rings before they sort of go out further. Then what we do is we use that propagation of code across all of those different various groups to bigger and bigger audiences to make sure that, you know, the apps that we have and the apps that people are reliant on are going to continue to work. And there's, you know, I talked about the feedback channel. There is, there's a section in the feedback tools, which is, you know, purely about compat insiders. Oh, you know, people using that feedback tool can essentially go away and say, hey, this particular version of this app isn't working on my system. And we literally, in my team, we have people that go away, they're assisted by machines as well, to go away and sort of drill into all that feedback and make sure we're sort of, you know, looking for problems. You know, could it be a problem in a framework? Could it be a problem somewhere else? Or is there some sort of outreach we need to do to a vendor if something is, you know, happening a lot? So we spend a lot of time there. But in addition to all of that, we use some of the data that's coming back to do a sort of matching of the app from one instance of Windows 10 to a new instance of Windows 10. And we look for things like, you know, has there been a change, a spike in the number of crashes on launch? Is the app freezing more often? Is it statistically relevant that, you know, that maybe, you know, there's more freezes and hangs in the app? That's typically a sign that something's going on with it. Or has the amount of foreground usage of that app changed dramatically in the median? All of those things are things we look for as signals to make sure that, is there something going on with a particular app? And then we're in a position to go away and sort of analyze and take steps if we need to as part of, you know, improving the product and making sure that, you know, compatibility of the operating system stays great.
I think it's one of those things that folks are obviously really concerned about. They're concerned that we're going to break those things, those niche cases. And I think there's a really good reason here to actually be a part of the Insiders program, is so that you can experience these changes firsthand as they're coming, and then you get to have that ability to feedback and to understand perhaps what's happening. And I guess in some circumstances, there's going to be needs to maybe change some of the ways that you're actually thinking about your deployment. So we're going to come to quite a lot of that a little bit later on in the webinar as well.
Sure.
Again, we've had a few folks that are still trying to get us to help out on their specific issues around being able to maybe dual boot or being able to get an upgrade working. It's not something that we can do during the course of the webinar, so use the official support channels for that. And if you've got specific feedback on how we can improve Windows, then go into the feedback app and start making those comments so that the folks in Bill's team actually get to see that information and really start to use it. And you can become one of the people that is actually giving us that really useful qualitative feedback that we can then go and use to maybe make some change to the product. And on that point, I think I'm kind of thinking, if I'm out there as a guy working inside of an IT company, working for an IT department, and one of the things that I've always been kind of stuck with, I guess, with Microsoft is, where are we going next? What's the roadmap look like?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts around understanding roadmap with Windows as a service?
That's a great question. So, as I sort of alluded to before, Windows 10 was, if you look at how many days from the beginning of the project to the point where we actually did the first public preview, was pretty momentous in terms of getting code and intention out into the marketplace very, very quickly. So what that essentially means is that, you know, if you're interested in the roadmap, you know, of the product or the updates that are coming, the subsequent updates that are coming, you know, a great way to do that is be part of the Insider program. And I don't mean for this to be sort of a big advertisement or a plug, but, you know, it really is. I mean, you get to see the technology as it's being, you know, built. You get to understand how it works in an environment and, you know what the nuances of that are. If things aren't to your liking, you can essentially sort of tell us that. You have the option to sort of give us that, you know, input. And then, you know, you can basically sort of see where the whole product is going. And this sort of, you know, also sort of tweaks to, you know, other reasons why it's worthwhile considering if you're an IT pro, you know, like being part of this cycle and being part of this sort of loop. The other thing that IT pros and sort of valuable for IT pros as well is the environments that, you know, like businesses run are a little bit different to the environments that enthusiasts or consumers will run in. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, we really value quite a lot is, you know, folks that are running in interesting networks. You know, you might have lots of different firewalls or different sort of, you know, WLAN protocols in an environment. And, you know, having that feedback from people running in those specialized environments basically gives us a heads up in terms of the work that we need to do or if something isn't working correctly so that we can sort of address those things earlier rather than later on. The other thing that I would say as well is, you know, IT pros, you know, folks, you know, working in businesses, from a hardware perspective, the hardware is a little bit different. You'll typically have different kinds of peripherals. You'll have, you know, maybe older versions of a smart card reader. The drivers on those machines will be slightly different. The software load will be a little bit different as well. So, you know, the ability to sort of, you know, take the product, run in those environments, ensure that we have, you know, we're getting the right kinds of feedback, and then giving us an opportunity to go and address those things earlier is something that's incredibly valuable for us. I also think that it's actually just quite a lot of fun as well to, you know, just sort of see an operating system and see its sort of growth and its change, be part of that, as well as, you know, interact with other insiders and other folks in the community as we're doing that sort of thing too. So I mean, I think, you know, these are sort of all sort of advantages in terms of, you know, considering being part of this Insider program.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting as well that it's we've had such amazingly good feedback from the insiders. And as someone who isn't working for Microsoft, it's always been kind of difficult to experience these early builds, what often is referred to as dog fooding of the operating system.
Yeah, that's right.
Really kind of early. And people have been asking us for that for such a long time. Yeah. And this really is the embodiment of the ability to really become a big part of that process. So I think it's kind of fantastic that we have that level of involvement. Have there been any kind of interesting stories that have come out of the Insiders program that are kind of worth highlighting a little bit?
There are certainly interesting changes that we've gone away and made in the various products. I mentioned before the start menu, lots and lots of feedback around the way start menu should work. And, you know, there were modifications in terms of the design. There were iterations of that were, you know, run through the Insider community until we sort of finalized and settled on a design, the final design there. There were, the Edge browser itself. Things like, you know, bring back the home button. Options on the browser itself to sort of do different things. All of these were interesting things that sort of came through the community. From a non-English perspective, just, you know, really great feedback coming through around how the product works in, you know, non-native English speaking countries and, you know, how language packs interact, whether, you know, something makes sense or something doesn't make sense. So that, you know, we've been able to sort of fine tune the product as appropriate for, you know, folks that aren't native English speakers or the English speaking world. You know, they're all sort of great things. You know, from on an enterprise side, you know, I can't there has been a number of VPN solutions that, you know, were a little bit problematic that were, you know, also sort of gone away and sort of driven through and sort of, you know, made a lot better. So, you know, there's a myriad of things that have happened, you know, stories and value that we've sort of seen out of this community. I mean, for me personally, I really enjoy the, like when we push the button on a flight, we have, you know, real-time systems, and it's just amazing to sort of just watch the, you know, to watch the insiders basically taking up a build and, you know, the thousands of people that sort of, you know, sort of get it and the code propagating. And within, you know, like within a short period of time, we start getting a really good idea of the trends and the sentiment and what's going on with some new piece of code and what people like and what people don't like. And it's incredibly powerful from an engineering perspective to be able to react to that. To, you know, quite literally the next day, go have a conversation with one of my counterparts around, hey, I'm not picking on the Bluetooth team. Hey, something happened with Bluetooth and, you know, the pairing on the phone isn't working quite right. That's a fictional example, by the way. But I'm just sort of saying, you know, examples of being able to quickly go away and sort of say, here's a thing, here's what we need to go away. Here's an option in terms of fixing it and going and fixing that stuff. That's, you know, certainly for someone that's worked in the Microsoft space and operating systems, it's incredibly powerful, and you know, it's really buoying because you feel like you have I'm representing the customers within the organization and making sure we're doing the right thing, and that's just incredible for us to be able to do.
I think there's an interesting parallel here too. If you think about the world of maybe online services, mm-hmm. and the kind of the place where both of us have actually come from with our backgrounds in financial. Mm-hmm. You'd kind of build these very big systems and then you'd operate them for a while. And now the world in that space has moved towards the idea of using DevOps really as the notion. And this really is kind of a DevOps for millions of devices.
Yeah, absolutely.
Giving us that kind of level of feedback that as engineers, we can take that information in and start to really be able to use it and serve our users better by having that kind of depth and breadth of information.
I mean, I suppose I'm going to sort of expose some of the sausage making here. But I mean, we quite literally have a daily flight ops meeting where we go away and we look at dashboards and we make decisions. And the main dashboards that we use to make decisions about what goes where and what we're sending to phone and what we're sending to PC, we call that mission control because we're all, you know, sort of geeky, space. Nerds sort of thing. But, it's sort of like, you know, the way we sort of envisaged it sort of thing. And, that's, you know, how we sort of, you know, we run this thing. And it's cool to be able to take, you know, what was a packaged piece of service, a packaged piece of software and serviceify the thing and be looking at it from that perspective and sort of treat it in some ways and think about it in some ways like a service in the cloud.
Yeah, and it's very cool. I think there's two things there that immediately strike a chord with me. As somebody who used to deploy thousands of desktops, whenever we'd kind of create a new build, we'd have all of our new updates in there, our new line of business apps, our new packages. We'd then go and do the deployment. We'd probably use Configuration Manager for it. Certainly I was in those points in time. And then I'd be starting to watch the graphs actually uptick and show me how many machines overnight we'd actually hit, how many had we done a remote start on, and how many machines had actually picked their update up.
Yep.
And off the back of that, as a deployment manager, I could go around the next day and say, okay, I've got three people on call. I need them to go and fix the five machines that had a hardware fault over that day.
Yeah.
And this was a few years ago. They could physically walk around to those machines and start to do that. And we're now able to kind of draw those parallels and be able to do those kind of things at a larger scale. And a lot of that means that we can take some of that load away from the end customers, I guess, of having to do a lot of that thinking. And we can take some of that away from the app compat point of view as well, as we've already mentioned. So it's utterly fascinating that we've kind of built ourselves around that. And it's very, very interesting that we have these kind of little things like mission control, where we can see exactly what's happening over time. And we can see the trends in uptake of people are actually taking more and more of the updates and that kind of stuff. It's very, very clever in terms of the way that we can service things. It also really does cut down on that one thing which has been a problem when you kind of think back to the box software world of, actually, it would take 3 years for something to roll out. We'd see something, we'd build it, we'd think, yep, that's a really good idea. And 3 years later, there'd be a new operating system. And you know what? We might have actually missed the mark. We might have missed the point in time where that was really useful, and the world changed again. And yet the operating system has got those features in there.
That's right. So it's incredibly powerful now in the sense that, I was working on Windows for Windows 7 and Windows 8, and those releases were, many years long, from the point where we started, thinking about the product to the point where we actually shipped the product. And like you say, the market can move. Things change very frequently. For us, this new mode and sort of, forcing ourselves into this sort of services mode where we're looking at the product, we're getting feedback quickly and we're iterating and reacting, essentially means, firstly, we're hopefully building the right things for our customer base and we're evolving the products in the right way. And that's just really powerful for us. And like the feedback we're getting through and just the excitement from these 6 million plus insiders egging us on to sort of go away and do more and innovate in other areas. We think it's sort of a bit of a sort of renaissance in terms of the way, we work and the kind of products we can decide to build, define, and hopefully the value we deliver to our customer base. And that's really what this is about for us.
So, Bill, thank you very much for joining us for this section and taking us through some of the inside of the Windows Insiders program and also for helping us understand a little bit more around Windows as a service. We're going to take a short break for a while now. And then when we come back, we're going to dive through some of the deployment options with Mike Niehaus. And we're also going to have a look at some of the other servicing options that are available for businesses so that you guys can actually start to think about how you're going to be able to do your deployments inside of your own worlds. We're also going to try and answer as many of the questions that are coming in through the Q&A as we possibly can. Some of those I haven't actually posted to Bill during the course of this because they're probably a little bit more suitable to some of the things that we're probably going to answer naturally through the course of the content that's coming up. So take a break, take one of those bio breaks. A few folks have already asked for a bio break inside of the Q&A and we'll be back in a few minutes' time.